John Mulaney's our guest tonight. The Chicago-born and raised stand-up comedian has written for SNL, where he created one of the biggest characters in that show's history, Stefan.
New York's hottest club is Whimsy, condemned by GLAAD and the EPA from Ghostbusters. This old, wet Band-Aid found in a jacuzzi is the kind of place that makes you feel weird the next time you see your parents. This place has everything. Kufa hats, congas, MTV's Dan Cortez.
And more recently scored again with George St. Geeglin, the co-host of the prank show Too Much Tuna, a viral hit for The Kroll Show.
Oh, hello.
Okay, so, Gil, so I looked over your chart.
And of course, I'm Gil Faison.
And I'm George St. Geeglin, his associate.
So I looked over your chart, and you have mercury poisoning.
Oh, thank you.
No, it's terrible. You have high levels of mercury in your blood, which is a very toxic poison.
And that's what Freddie Mercury died of?
No, he died of AIDS.
Right, he was poisoned by it, so it was mercury's poisoning.
No, actually. I mean,
we're saying the same thing.
And even more recently, Mulaney took his talents to the network, scoring his own self-titled sitcom on Fox. Not bad for the 32-year-old St. Ignatius grad. John Mulaney's currently on a national comedy tour that ends right here in Chicago. Two shows at Chicago Theater on May 30th. It's our pleasure to introduce John Mulaney. John, thanks for joining us on The Download.
Thanks for mentioning St. Ignatius as one of my biggest credits.
That is a big, and you're from Chicago. Being from Chicago, how does it feel to end the tour at the Chicago Theater?
It was perfect. It wasn't, we didn't know when I was going to do Chicago, and then it just came together that I'd be on the road all spring, and I was like, can we just cap it off like right at the end of May? And we were able to do it. It's perfect.
So, you know, you're taping a special at Chicago Theater, right?
Yeah, that's right. Filming a special.
So how, when you film a special as a stand-up, what changes for you? Because, you know, you got all the cameras and all the other things. I mean, by this point, you're pretty used to it. But what are some of the things that you have to think about when you're actually taping a special as opposed to just doing a stand-up show?
Well, a lot of it is forgetting that it's a special and just doing the best show you can. And also, you know, on some things, you know, You just try to balance, like, hey, I'm in this big theater with all these people, but I'm also doing this for people to watch at home or, like, on their phone or on their watch or whatever will be media in the next year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a bit of just being aware of the camera and playing to the camera. I mean, that's kind of a mind thing. You just learn, like, well, I may feel the need to scream because there's so many people here, but also you can be subtle for the crowd and for the people who will be watching at home.
Tell us about your time in Chicago. What got you into comedy? What made you pick this career, being a Chicagoan, going to St. Ignatius, that kind of thing?
I mean, I don't know, and I wouldn't know how to psychoanalyze why so many funny people come to Chicago, but everyone I knew was funny. I mean, I feel like from the time I was in preschool, I had an unofficial sketch group of like four friends where we were all very different, but all super funny people. I was more surprised by my friends who did go into comedy, you know, people that made me laugh so hard growing up who now do other things. I sort of assumed everyone wanted to do it professionally, and that's why we were constantly screwing around in school. I don't know exactly what it is. There's obviously, professionally, so many amazing things to do in Chicago, but at the same time, there's just a lot of funny people, and I came from that, you know, all Catholic school, mainly 100% Irish world where people have so many damn issues that they become extremely hilarious.
And what was, you know, when you look back, I mean, a lot of times people will look at their college lives and, you know, they join the improv troupe. You went to Georgetown. You know, join the improv troupe, you start to take study. You study there some comedy and you say, I want to do this as a profession. For you, is that how it went? Or, you know, you talked about sort of being around a lot of funny people when you were a lot younger than that. You know, did it come naturally? Or were you thinking about being a writer, a stand-up, a performer before college?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to be a comedian from as far back as I can remember. I remember in fifth grade, this teacher at St. Clement on Orchard, where I went to elementary school, gave me an article called The Original Smartass White Guy. It was about a a writer named Henry Beard, who had been at the Harvard Lampoon and then founded the National Lampoon.
Yeah.
It was like from Esquire or something. She was like, I think you would like this. So I was, you know, I loved watching all comedy on TV. And then, you know, from around age 8 or 9, I was really into comedians and reading about them. And I remember being at Camp Lincoln in Minnesota, and I was sitting by the lake, like near the canoes, reading Wired by Bob Woodward about John Belushi. And some counselor was like, what are you reading? And I was like, I'm reading a book called Wired.
I'm at the heroin part of it. Leave me alone. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, what's it about? I'm like, well, he's doing this thing called Freebase. And they were like, they didn't take it away from me, to their credit. They were like, okay, well. But no, I was pretty hooked from there on in.
Well, I mentioned, you know, in the intro that you're 32 years old, which is remarkably young for someone with such an esteemed and established career. Talk about,
well, bear in mind, I had no other skills and no other interests.
Talk about, you know, your move from college and moving to New York, doing stand up, and finding yourself in a situation to be a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Well, you know, moving to New York. Well, I lived there for a summer during college. And after that, I thought, man, I don't know if I want to finish college. I might just want to do this. I, in the end, kind of had to finish school and then went to New York, I think, 2 weeks after graduation. So that was the most deliberate part of it for me. And after that, it was very lucky, happy accidents, such as doing stand-up and then being on Conan O'Brien a couple times and getting seen by Saturday Night Live and being asked to audition and then getting hired as a writer. That all just kind of happened. That literally came together in 48 hours. I was called on a Tuesday to audition on a Thursday. And then, you know, they were like, do you want to be a writer? And I said, sure. I canceled a bunch of stand-up dates I had, and then I did that for the next 4.5 years. So there was the big move of, I'm going to be a comedian and take temp jobs so that I can do this and, you know, get as many roommates as I can in New York to make this work. And after that, I stumbled upon some very nice gigs.
Talk about, I know I read somewhere that you actually went in to audition to be a cast member, and they offered you the writer position. And that can work one way or the other way, as you send a packet. In your case, was that a letdown for you? Were you like trying to be a cast member?
No. Saturday Night Live at that time had Bill Hader, Will Forte, Sudeikis, Seth Meyers. There were many extremely talented, lanky white guys. And I was just kind of flattered to be asked to audition. And I thought, well, this will be a cool story. I'll be able to say one, you know, in the future that I got to audition for Lorne Michaels, and that'll be it, you know. I had written for a couple little things here and there, so maybe in the back of my mind I had thought about writing. I don't even remember if I had. No, I went in thinking, actually, hey, this is kind of nice. There's some people here who really want to get this, and I'm just going to go in and kind of do my act, and hopefully there was a bit of freedom to it on my part, which I am very grateful for. I was kind of out-of-body nervous, but I also thought, you're not going to get this, so just be very funny.
John Mulaney is currently on tour, and the tour ends up right here in Chicago on May 30th, 2 shows at Chicago Theater. When we come back, we're going to talk about Too Much Tuna, Stefan, and Mulaney, John's short-lived sitcom on network television. You're listening to The Download here on WGN.
And he's got some really crazy friends. Oh, new in town. John Mulaney's new in town.
This is The Download on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman talking with John Mulaney, Chicago-born and raised comedian who, John, I got to say, like, some of the characters that you've created in the last 5 years are some of the more iconic characters in American comedy right now. Stefan with Bill Hader I thought I saw a ranking where even Stefan made it to the top 10 characters of all time on that show. And then Too Much Tuna is off the charts, man. That is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Let's talk about Too Much Tuna.
Yeah,
tell me about George St. Gaglin. Tell me about George and where you came up with that character. I know you talked a little bit on the Kroll Show. They do the kind of cutaway interviews. But tell us about where George St. Gaglin came from.
You know, coming from the Midwest and then going to school on the East Coast and then living in New York, I was very much an outsider to the type of liberal but also racist, fake intellectual people that sometimes populate the East Coast of the United States, all respect to them, but that sort of turtleneck and blazer, like theater, but is also a petty idiot type of person was very amusing to me coming from Chicago. And I also, you know, like whenever I need to get a blazer for George St. Gaglin, I always just try to think about what someone wore in, like, Hannah and Sisters. Those movies I watched a lot as a kid. My brother and I would watch a lot of Woody Allen movies. And so there was a bit of, like, that early 80s New York person that I'm familiar with from those movies. Well, we actually saw two guys at this used bookstore called The Strand in New York. And they were both buying copies of Alan Alda's autobiography. They were both buying copies. And that was like, oh, yeah, that's my favorite type of person right there.
What I like about George is the mean streak. Because there's you know, at first you're like, oh, this is playful and fun. It almost always ends with him going off the rails and just, you know, berating someone. It's a great combination,
a
great twist.
Yeah, a friend of ours said, you guys like doing Oh Hello and Too Much Tuna because it's your real self. John gets to get in touch with the part of him that's a total bastard, and Nick gets to act like a baby.
That's great. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about Stefan. You wrote the character with Bill Hader, which seemed to be, you know, a well-documented character. But what I think is really great, especially for people.
Well-documented
character.
Really well-documented.
But it seems to be like a walking timeout New York ad, right, or review for the clubs that we have that here in Chicago too.
The way that clubs were written up back then was influenced. Yeah.
So how do you, for our listeners at WGN, when you say you wrote a character or you developed a character, especially if it's in somebody else's voice, did you write for the character? Did you guys come up with it together? How does it work when you develop a character for SNL?
It starts very sort of in the ether with, like, what about talking like this? The earliest part of it was Bill knew this barista that sort of had the mannerisms of Stefan, and I knew a guy that was always trying to start club nights, and he would listen in that way, and he would say, it's going to have everything, and then he would list things he'd never heard of. So it was totally, I mean, you're just together, first off, at Saturday Night Live for 72 hours on end. You kind of throw out anything. And, you know, we started just doing the voice and listing things. We wrote the character in a sketch in that kind of format a couple times. It really worked once he was his own man on Weekend Update. But it really started with, like, you know, oh, what about the club guy? You know, because you're just sitting around trying to think of anything. And maybe one night we had done that voice and then put it away, and then another week we had nothing, and it was like, what about that boyfriend thing that we have?
What about Club Guy?
It really starts in a super loose place.
Let's talk about your sitcom. You made it to Fox with the sitcom Mulaney, which a lot of people compared to Seinfeld, which was about a comic and his friends, and you sort of bookended it with stand-up routine. It didn't have a long run. It was canceled at the beginning of the year.
No, I'd say it had a short one.
What'd you do, about two, three months on that? But
no, I worked on it for about 2 years because it was at another network, and then it was at the Fox network.
I mean, it's interesting when you talk about it. You worked on it for 2 years and did it that way. Is that usually how a sitcom works? I mean, are people brought together?
TV development can be extremely fast. I've seen it go from, you know, a conversation to they want to announce it the next week.
And at the time when you pitched the show, you were still writing for SNL at that time?
No, I had left. I really loved it, but I wanted to move on. And so I left that May. I came back to write for some other shows after I left, but I sort of officially left and was trying to think of what I wanted to do next. And then, man, it must have been August pitched the first incarnation of the show.
And the sitcom, what's interesting, is very traditional in the way the way it was set up.
Oh, yeah, deliberately so.
Yeah, and why did you go that direction? It's interesting because the work you've done on SNL.
Not really. I mean, people were doing multicams, but they were of a different stripe. And I wanted to do a multicam with a live audience that had just weirder storylines that weren't what other multicams were doing. And by the way, those shows that are on like CBS, those are huge hits. But every show every show that people I knew were watching were
right.
Single cam. I'm not trying to be exclusionary at all. That's just the fact.
No, yeah. Right.
And there's this sense of humor. My generation's, what if we took that and did a weird version of an old show you've seen, you know, where there's a neighbor and there's a boss and there's all those cliches, but the jokes are different.
You know,
and hey, noble experiment.
Don't you live in a world where, you know, you can work, you can put passion projects together, you can write characters, but, you know, they're short-lived. I mean, it could be 2 months, it could be a five-month gig. We just had somebody in here, Katie Rich, who was talking about, you know, just the idea the world kind of works where, you know, in this world you get 5 months on, 5 months off, you know, you may get a gig where it's 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
But so it's not that... it's not that weird to hear a story where a sitcom only plays for 13 episodes and then you're on to your next project.
No. 98% of this business is failure.
Well, then you've got a good thing going since you've got some pretty good success.
No, I wrote that 2% for a while, but then I I crashed the Corvette.
So what's next? What's next for you? I mean, are you staying in that world? Are you going to stay and try to do more television? You know, are you thinking about a different course? What's next for John Mulaney?
I'm doing as much stand-up comedy as possible, doing this special that we're, you know, taping at the Chicago Theater, touring a little more after that, and then I want to put the next special together. I'll be working on something with Nick Kroll next year, but I try to have maybe 2 month plans at the longest.
Interesting. John Mulaney.
I think setting out a 2 year plan it always falls apart.
Well, yeah, I just thought about that. I'm like, well, Kroll show's over. You know, we don't have your sitcom anymore. No more Stefan. You're not on SNLs. We see you every week. So, you know, the best place to find you would be in the clubs or on this tour. John Mulaney, you know, ending the tour, or you're going to tour a little bit after, but the two big shows.
We're doing states in England and Ireland.
Oh, okay.
So
we could say national tour. U.S. tour ends in Chicago on May 30th. Two shows at the Chicago Theater, and John will be taping a special there as well. So get out to that. John, I can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk to us on The Download.
I am so not busy today, but I appreciate it. And it was great to talk to you, man. Hope people come out May 30th. It's going to be very cool.
All right, great. Thanks, John.
All right, take care.